Loveline is meant for an adult audience.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Listener discretion is advised.
Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Loveline starts now.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. It's indeed 1-800-LOVE-191. And tonight, it's a pleasure to welcome into the studio none other than Danny Bonaducci.
Hey, Danny. Doc. How you doing, man?
I'm good, buddy. A little tired. I actually wore myself out talking to you all day.
I have been married to people that I've spent less time with than you.
Danny and I did like a marathon interview. And I want to apologize. We took over his house for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
I apologize for that. And secondly, just thank you for letting us do that. It's actually a moving experience for me.
It was a great experience for me. It really was.
It was stirring. And
you know what's cool about us together in that way, where you say it was moving to listen to me talk? You mentioned that earlier and you were very kind. On the other hand, I am an identified patient and you're a really good doctor. So it's kind of cool. Like, I had my own doctor all day. Because you go in to see the psychiatrist and stuff, and when you leave, you go, oh, I should have told him about the weird dreams, and when I pass the pharmacy, how my flesh starts to boil.
Right.
And then with you left, after 6 hours, there was absolutely nothing left to tell you.
As opposed, I wish I'd said that. We got producers going, did you say this? Did you say that?
Yeah.
You get enough of this?
Try this.
Let's try that. How about that? How about the kids? Can we get them in here too? It's like, oh, please, guys, come on. But your house is spectacular.
Thanks, man.
And I guess that's a new home for you guys.
Yeah, about a year.
Which, amazingly, you moved into during the film.
My wife moved into that house while I was in rehab. Which, if you want to see something get your attention, find out through the grapevine there's moving vans in front of your house while you're in a lockdown facility. It gets your attention.
My wife's leaving.
Yeah. Well, we had a speaker that night who was talking about how terrible his life was.
Yeah.
And he said, and then my wife served me divorce papers while I was in rehab. And the next day, I hear that there's moving vans in front of my house.
For some reason, I just flashed on a story you told me about one of your earlier treatments. People know Danny from Breaking Bonaducci. They saw really your most accelerated manifestation of your addiction.
Yeah, that's the worst I've ever seen.
The worst you've ever been.
I've been at it a long time, and that was the high point.
And just to bring you all up to date, Danny managed to get in a motorcycle accident. You want to tell us about that?
Just got my arms out of casts and splints and stitches. I got a lot of steel in this arm, a lot of steel in this hand.
And the head injury?
The head injury is not so pronounced. I was all covered in blood. Actually, if you go to eBay, it's not me, or I wouldn't point this out. My wife is furious. Apparently, my helmet split in half, and the whole front came off, and it's all full of blood. And somebody who witnessed the accident picked it up and put it on eBay. So if you, for any reason in the world, would like a helmet full of blood, I think it's on eBay. I don't know how you search such things. I'm not very good with a computer.
I'm going to go yet to another story to take you back to a previous treatment.
Yeah.
Where you were telling me that you planned, rather than go to treatment, you were going to go on a cruise.
Well, no, I was going on a cruise anyway.
As far as you were concerned.
Yeah, no, my wife and I were going on a cruise. And it's so funny because we've had to cancel a lot of vacations. And finally, I looked at my wife at one point and said, we really can't afford to cancel this. She goes, honey, I'm not an idiot. I always take the insurance on you.
Yes.
Which kind of hurts your feelings when she's right.
Kind of scares me a little bit, too.
So we were going to on a cruise off the coast of Spain. This was like my first big-time vacation. And the other half, my last TV show was about to start, the one with Dick Clark and Mario Lopez. And my vacation had started on Friday, right after the radio show was over. And I was actually leaving for Spain on that Wednesday. But I was officially on vacation no matter what, right?
Right.
So my wife comes down at Sunday morning. And I'm standing there in the kitchen. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning. And I have a full glass of vodka in one hand. And I'm in my underwear. And I'm eating lemon meringue pie out of the tin with a ladle. And my wife comes in and she looks at me. And she goes, is that who you want to be? And I said, what do you mean? Because I didn't get it. It seemed like the good life to me. I got a glass of vodka and a pie and a ladle. What could you possibly be bumming about? I have the keys to the kingdom. And she said, your new show is going to start right when we get back from vacation. And is that who you want to be? I said, I don't understand. She said, well, Dick Clark will be the sage. And Mario Lopez will be the sexy one. And you'll be the fat drunk on television. And I looked down and I was all fat. And I was pretty drunk. And I was about to start a television show. So I went to rehab. On the way to rehab, I was encouraged to drink. Just, you know, because they didn't want...
So you didn't detox, didn't have withdrawal seizures.
Right, I didn't think that, and I don't think anybody wanted me to change my mind. It was a long drive to Malibu.
Right.
You know, that's an hour and a half.
Yes.
That's a long time to sober up and go, this is a bad idea, let's go to Spain where the food's better. So when I got to the rehab, I kind of forgot what was happening. It was a famous rehab in Malibu. If you think it's that one, it probably is, where all the movie stars go. By the way, full on A-list at this rehab. The A-list.
When you were there.
Huge movie stars. Huge. I couldn't believe it. I'd check in just to meet the people. You know, for 40 grand, it's still money well spent. And so I went in and I was drinking and they checked me and all I really remember is thinking, A, nice place to vacate. You could see the ocean had real similarities. Maybe I was in Spain, I wasn't real sure. And I passed out, they checked me in. Last thing I remember hearing was, that'll be $35,000, Mrs. Bonaducci. I go, dude, that's kind of a ripoff, man. So I passed out. I woke up. This is the weird thing because I now, when I woke up, thought I was on my cruise.
Right.
I'm in a room, a nice little room. I go to the kitchen, which is weird. You'd never do this on a cruise ship, but you know, my thinking wasn't great. I went to the kitchen. I made a sandwich. I made a peanut butter sandwich. And there were guys kind of like, I guess, orderlies. Techs is what they called them.
Right.
I don't know what they did. Yeah. But they're kind of getting in my face. And I thought, this is like rude behavior for a crew. Yeah. You guys should be bringing me room service and peeling me grapes. What is up with bothering me? So I went outside and I'm really bothering them. And I'm saying, this is not the greatest boat I've ever been on. I'm pretty insistent I'm on a ship. And the second I get outside and I feel the grass between my toes, I was barefoot. I thought, oh my God, that's right. And all, of course, you know, if you ever drank too much, and I'm guessing some of you have, it comes back flooding to you. You get it right away. Oh my God. So the guy's bugging me. And I look at it, I go, wait, I'm sorry. I remember what happened. I had a lot to drink. I was supposed to check myself in. I get it. We're not on a boat, but I'll be going home now. And he goes, well, that's fine, Mr. Bonaducci, but would you like to put some pants on? And I look down, and I'm stark naked on the grass with people around eating a peanut butter sandwich. And I thought, you know, I might need to be here. I'm not sure, but I might. This might be a sign.
Looking at my wang hanging out in the middle of the treatment center.
At my current girth, I couldn't actually see it. I was pretty big at that. There's a reason I had to shed some pounds.
Wow, you're really that big at that point. You've done okay.
Yeah, I was about, let's see, I'm about 155 right now. I might have been 190.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, that's hard.
Yeah, it was hardcore.
Well, I mean, it's hard to lose all that weight. I mean, forget that.
Well, as you probably know from rehabs, though, I was in there with some experts.
Yeah.
You know, rehabs aren't just for drunks and drug addicts. They're for bulimics. Yes. They're for anorexics. I had some real coaches in the dieting area.
Oh, really? So you got in with the... Oh.
I had a girl look at me straight face and just said, it's not even hard to go 28 days without eating. And that's how long I was there.
Did you not eat the
No, I ate like crazy. No, I gained like 20 pounds. That's huge.
All right, let's take some calls. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. We'll start with Nicole. This is Danny Bonaducci. Nicole, you're 24.
Yes, sir. I'm 24.
All right, Nicole.
How are you?
You're good. What's up?
Oh, well, I kind of, I nicknamed it, I guess, the alcohol whore. I don't ever want to have sex unless I'm drunk. And at that point, my boyfriend gets pissed off. But at that point, you know, I don't even care really who it's with. I'm not saying that I'll just take anybody home, because it's only happened like once. Unfortunately, it has happened. But that's how I feel. It's like, man, I'm horny. I'm ready to have sex. And I'm drunk. But when I'm sober, my boyfriend gets mad because I don't ever, he'll touch me and I'm like, leave me alone, get away.
So what do you
me.
Think the big problem is here, that you don't like to have sex when you're sober, or that you have a tendency to sleep with strangers when you're drunk? Which do you find to be the issue?
Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, I would think so too, yeah. Doc.
Both.
Both.
But a little bit of both, unfortunately.
What is it about, Nicole, I'm not getting a clear read on you though. Do you have a boyfriend?
I do have a boyfriend.
And that's going okay?
It's going all right. I mean, I'm getting ready to leave, and that's kind of been...
Leave him.
Well, I'm getting ready to leave for like a year and a half. I'm in the military. And so I'm getting ready to be gone. And before we started dating, I told him, look, I'm getting ready to leave.
Yeah,
and
I think this has
been dating for like 4 months.
As far as it pertains to this relationship, I think this is more about the fact that it's over.
Right.
Yeah,
it is over. By the way, you're aware of that, right? The doctor's right. No matter what you do, no matter what you think, and in the back of your mind, you probably know. You know it's doomed, correct?
This is doomed.
And I know it's going to be over. I mean, he's a great person, and he's really nice, and he'll do anything for me. And that really makes me feel bad that...
And so when you're sober, and when you're sober and when you're intimate with him, you remember that this feels pretty good. This is a great guy. And, oh, damn, it's going to end. So that's painful. And why put you
in a couple of months?
Why does this guy tolerate this? See, I would tolerate you getting drunk and sleeping with somebody you didn't know because I understand it. You know, what I don't understand is only somebody that gets drunk and sleeps with people they don't know once. You know, I don't get that. Before I used to wake up with strangers all the time and just hope it was a girl so that way I could face my friends.
I have the tendencies. I have the tendencies when I'm drunk, and unfortunately, you know, it has happened once, and I felt really embarrassed by it because I had a lot of friends, because a lot of my friends came over to my house.
All right, Nicole, let's get focused. What do you want from us tonight?
Basically, I'm just trying to figure out why am I? I don't know why I feel this way. Because I mean,
because you're done. Because this relationship is over. This relationship is over.
Is that to dissuade guilt, so she doesn't feel bad about staying with this guy, so she pretends in some way not to enjoy it?
No, I think the fact is that she can't feel intimate with him because it's too painful to touch that intimacy and then know that it's going to be falling apart in a matter of weeks or months.
By the way, if you think that getting drunk and sleeping with a stranger has not caused you a problem yet, wait till you're in the active armed forces and you think you get that reputation. As this is the girl we throw five drinks and then she sleeps with that barracks.
Oh.
You won't love that.
And if that starts happening, that's when you want to look into whether or not alcohol is an issue here, because you may be alcoholic. And if you have a family history of alcoholism, I would anticipate that path opening up for you. Mimi, 21.
Hi, Danny. How are you?
Hi, Mimi. I'm well, thank you. And you?
I'm good, thanks. My partner and I have been having sex for about 3 months now.
Is your partner a woman?
And
I think not.
I've never heard partner.
Yeah, why are you calling your boyfriend a partner?
Well, we're not really, we're just dating, I guess, and boyfriend was just not the right word at the time.
Friends with benefits.
Why didn't you pick associate?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, like 3 weeks into it, he started getting symptoms of penile discharge and burning sensation.
E-E.
So wow, it sounds a lot like he had symptoms of VD.
So we both went to
very
get
funny.
Tested, and
yes.
We were, both came out negative.
Hmm.
So I was just calling to see if oral sex can cause those symptoms.
Not usually discharge. It can cause pain with urination and cause irritation and sort of urgency, like you need to go badly even when you'll have to go just a little bit.
And contrary to popular belief, men can get yeast infections, can't they?
They can, but that's typically on the skin.
I've sworn to it a couple of times, Doc. Don't blow my cover.
I'm just saying. But it wouldn't cause, I mean, unless you have something in your mouth, like you can get chlamydia and other things in your mouth to transmit to him. But, did they treat both of you?
They treated him. I had actually gone to get tested 2 months in a row. I had gotten tested just 2 months earlier.
Typically, though, you'd still treat both of you just to be sure there isn't something sort of lingering in the upper genital tracts with you. And he maybe needs to be careful with oral sex. Some guys get real irritated from that. And he's actually getting discharge, urethral discharge?
Yeah, it's a clear discharge, and it goes away after a week.
I don't think that's just, he's just sort of salivating. That's not really, discharge is a
thick. Is that true?
Discharge is a white, thick pus. That's what a discharge, yeah. I may want to know more, but not right at the moment. And the clear discharge is just sort of leakage, really, because things are irritated and the whole thing is sort of, it's salad, you know, think about it as sort of any other sort of, I don't know how to describe it.
I think salivation is really good.
Is a similar kind of thing, yeah. And it just means that the tract is irritated. And again, I would treat it with antibiotics, and it could be prostatitis, could be epididymitis, could be, again, in him, something higher up.
He's awful young for all of that, isn't he?
But, you know, guys just get that. They get it once. I bet you'll find, maybe, if you really question him carefully, he's had an STD at one time in his life. And then that kind of sets him. No?
He had epididymitis.
Yes, there you go.
Good job, Doc.
And epididymitis is kind of what's going on now, too, basically. Like prostatitis, epididymitis, and I think it's all the same process. And so that original infection is what set him up for these recurrences.
By the way, if you find out that he still sees that girl that gave it to him, but, you know, we're just friends now, I would now start to question that.
Chandler, 16.
Hey, I was wondering, when I was younger, like fourth grade, me and my friend kind of like messed around, and I told my mom about it after we caught my brother and actually the same kid who I did it with, his brother, and she called it experimenting and said it happened to her when she was younger and it wasn't.
Uh-oh. What happened? What do you mean experimenting?
Well, like we would like, I don't know, like we would just like do sexual things to each other.
How many times?
What?
How many times did you do sexual things with this guy?
Probably like we spend the night like every Saturday or something, and it would happen like every time, and then like we would just go back to like being normal and like never mention it around each other until like we are by ourselves again.
What do you mean sexual things?
Like we would he would give me stuff like that, but we were too young to like really understand what all that was.
That's not experimenting.
No.
Experimenting is what's this, look at that, let's examine. Putting something in your mouth or in the anus or in the vagina, that's not experimenting.
Yeah.
That means somebody did something, an adult did something to him, and now he's sexually abusing other children. Now, the fact that it happened to your mom and your mom isn't dealing with the fact that she too was abused and is defending against that by condoning what happened to you, that's a pretty serious thing.
Yeah, it's a quick leap from experimentation to Brokeback Mountain, and I'm afraid you've been ridden.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, I also have another question. This happened, like I guess my brother passed on to my cousin and stuff, but, like, I didn't know, like, who I should see about it or what all I should do.
You might want to talk to maybe a school counselor, start there, and if that doesn't go anywhere, your doctor.
How old's this kid? because you talk to a school counselor. Not that I'm telling you should not. I'm not in any way telling you should not say the right person in some stance of authority. But you talk to a person in the right kind of authority, and they are legally obliged to inform other people. And I don't know that you're prepared for that yet. How old is this kid? Is anybody over 18?
No, it was like when we were he was a year older than me.
And this was only back then?
Yeah, it was back then. It hasn't happened for a long time. Like,
are you confused or questioning your sexuality now? Are you wondering if you're gay or not? Or do you know you're straight? Or do you know you're gay?
No, I mean, I know I'm straight. Like, but like, okay. It made me wonder, like, whether that's going to have effect on my life later on. Like,
You would already be having a lot of confusion if it really is a significant issue for you. Thankfully, it doesn't sound like it's had much of an impact on you, and you seem okay.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned with the mom dismissing it and happening to your brother, and God knows what he's experiencing now, and that this kid may have been or continue to do things with other kids.
Kind of predator.
Yeah, it's a concern. All right,
but the doctor's right. When I first heard your voice, and once the question was clear, I thought to myself, "No, obviously he's not calling up to say I'm in a panic. I'm scared. What should I do?"
He's okay.
If you don't think you're a wreck, then you're not a wreck. You know, if you're fine with it, you're fine with it. And I wouldn't stay up nights over this.
Right. And he's clear in who he is, his orientation. He can have stable relationships. All good signs. This is Aaron, 21. You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
Hey, how's it going? Big fan of Loveline, and your show, Danny Bonaducci.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question. You had one of those motorized skateboards.
Yeah. Oh, the one you saw on television?
Yeah.
That actually wasn't.
I wrecked so hard, and I saw you cruising. Did you have a wreck on it, like, really hard? Because you were just cruising right through traffic.
I have wrecked on it hard, and actually, it was my intention to wreck on it hard that day. What I was doing on the shot you saw is was kind of a, oh, man, this is so bad. I got some news I didn't like. And essentially what that was is I had a war of wills, my skateboard versus your Buick. And I rode down the wrong side of the road at a very sharp rate of speed through a red light on Los Feliz Boulevard, a very busy intersection, with my arms out essentially like, I dare you to hit me. And they'd slam on their brakes and they're beeping and they're almost crashing into each other, but nobody hit me. It was kind of a big night out.
Oh, geez.
That all was on film?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was on TV. That's why I'm up for the Emmy, man. But, so, yeah, I've wiped it out a few times. But, you know, that's what makes the world go round. It's something to do to break the monotony.
Yeah, that's true.
See ya. Take care.
From your wife's hometown, Phoenix.
Isn't that really? She's not her hometown, but that's where I met her, and that's where her family lives.
Stephanie, 25.
Hi.
Hi, Steph.
Hey, I actually had a question for you, Danny. I was wondering if, I mean, you're obviously a very intelligent person. I've watched your show, and I'm wondering if maybe you thought that being intelligent may be part of the reason that you're an addict.
Oh, all addicts are intelligent.
I don't think it's a reason why. I certainly think that they are symptomatic of one another.
Addicts are intelligent. They tend to be very intelligent people.
But most people with any kind of mental disorder usually have some sort of advantage in there, whether they have a high IQ.
Yeah.
I think we find what Shakespeare referred to as our mortal coils a little inhibiting. There's shackles that I don't wish to wear. And the fastest, I've tried 1,000 other ways out to try and not participate in the world by the world's rules. Uh-huh. And the quickest and most easily accepted, to my surprise, was eventually just diminishing my grasp on what was really happening around me. And that way I didn't have to participate in it. So I don't know that it's being smart. I mean, theoretically, I'm supposed to be smart. According to the test results, I'm a real smart guy. But then again, I do some ridiculously stupid things.
What is it you're alluding to, Stephanie? What are you thinking?
Well, the reason I'm asking is because a lot of Danny's actions have seemed, just from watching his show, similar to things that my father did. My father was a raging alcoholic and a very intelligent man. My brother and I are the same way. Our IQ tests have rated above 160. And,
Jesus, that's really high. Did you know that? That's extraordinarily high.
That's what we've been told. But at the same time, we usually end up feeling bored by things around us, and we'll look for other things to kind of fill that lack of stimuli.
Yeah, but Stephanie, that's not an intellectual symptom. That is a classic symptom of alcoholism, frankly. The alcoholics alcoholics are at their best in extraordinarily stimulating circumstances like battle.
Yes.
Or like, you know, they make great soldiers, great fighter pilots, great race car drivers, stunt drivers, racing skateboards down the middle of the street with your hands in the air.
If
while
it goes fast, I've raced it.
Right, and that is a symptom of the quality of the reward system, how you're configured genetically when you have this disease. So, and the boredom, when you feel it, usually is actually a sign of depression. And the boredom is a way of making you go out and do some of those exciting things so you can manage your depression better.
And that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because what happens is that you reward yourself with these ever-growing and ever-steepening and ever more dangerous activities that the reward is so amazing. It starts off just going fast and wasn't that great, and then it was not crashing and isn't that great. There's nothing like a reward that I'm not dead and I should have been. Mm-hmm. The reward is life. That's playing for big stakes right there.
That's kind of what I've been wondering, is because my brother, he is in the Navy. And he is a genius, and mm-hmm. he works around dangerous situations all the time.
He's a good old, but make him be careful. Just, genes are not destiny. So just because he has this sort of quality doesn't mean he has to become a raging alcoholic, though he's at risk for it.
Right. And I'm similar in the fact, I'm rebellious enough that I don't want to go into the armed forces, and I've got enough of an attitude problem, I know, that I've kind of taken it out in being unusually hostile toward people in general. And
that's what I like in my soldiers.
Yeah. You, unfortunately, Stephanie, you're busily trying to figure things out in terms of your cognitive functioning. Your intellectual functioning is a separate part of your brain and mechanisms from the emotional and personality functions.
Uh-huh.
It figures into it, but it really, there's a whole separate domain of the emotional and the personality and whatnot. And for whatever reason, you have seemed to have very poor insight in how that system works. So you may want to use that intellect to read more about emotional systems and interpersonal regulation. I'd put two names out there for you, a guy named Fonagy, F-O-N-A-G-Y, and a guy named Shore, S-C-H-O-R-E. Because
mm-hmm.
Your thinking is, there's a whole domain of your brain that's operating that you don't seem to understand. Okay?
Oh, by the way, when you get over the romance of alcoholism, because there is a romance, you think, F. Scott Fitzgerald and Hemingway. And,
yeah.
It's not really like that. When you hear Hemingway got in a big fight and tore down this bar, and then he wrote The Sun Also Rises. That's a fabulous story, but that's not really happened. He really broke his nose and broke his cheek and lost two teeth and probably aged for 4 months.
Right.
It's really not the way you think. It's not bar fights in the movies. Somebody hurts somebody.
Right.
DUIs are no longer a thing where you pay a fine. They change your life forever. A drunk driving ticket will change your life forever and haunt you to the grave. It's not romantic. It's not. It's a huge, huge hassle.
And yet, let me just tell you, hearing you even talk about your motorcycle accident to the listener sounds romantic.
Yes, it does. Well, that's the way I tell it.
But?
Well, I've got to be, I am the educator and the educatee right here. When you're talking about, there is a certain, if not
you're
romance,
romancing it. You're romancing
I
yourself.
Because the actual accident took probably a split second. I don't really remember it. But the scars will last forever. And in the words of Gavin DeGraw, I've got scars I can talk about. I've got a good story for every single one of my scars. But you forget the real pain. And you forget the fear. The tabloids called my wife and said, do you have a comment about Danny's current condition? And apparently I was in a coma at Cedars-Sinai.
She didn't know about it?
I didn't have any ID on me.
Was she?
Somebody
wiped
blood off my face and they recognized me.
You were just lost somewhere? They didn't know where you were?
No, I was going to the gym. And they figured, she wasn't even worried about me. She got a phone call from the National Enquirer.
Like within hours of you having this accident?
Yeah, probably within several hours. And somebody apparently drove by. But what I read in the National Enquirer was one of the witnesses said, we didn't recognize him. His face was covered with blood. So they called up Gretchen and said, they wiped off this blood. And it seems like your husband's at Cedars-Sinai with broken arms and a leg and ribs and sternum and all of this stuff. And so that's not romantic. That's a scared wife and the mother of your children. Mm. So what I was saying is it's all kind of cool, and I wish I didn't tell such a good story when I'm trying to get it across. But this is, I've got enough metal in my body now to set off airport detectors.
Now, your son's pretty young, so he wouldn't have really been aware of what was going on, but your daughter is very aware of everything.
Yeah.
Did this freak her out?
I don't know, because I was really in and out of consciousness for about a week, so everything kind of settled down by the time I could kind of remember things.
Did she come visit you?
I was out of the hospital within 48 hours, I think.
So she didn't come visit?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I noticed she's not happy about you getting into the bike.
I know, but I'm not happy about the idea of being stuck in traffic. It's my, it's my contention that if you have the right bike and the right guts, there's no traffic in Los Angeles. I just made a mistake about it 3 weeks ago where Los Feliz turns into Western. I'll be more careful on that corner, Doc.
Wait till you start using the steroids again. Bad times.
Not
All right, everybody, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. It's Danny Bonaducci, and we'll be right back.
Loveline! How do you want me to say it?
Loveline will be right back.
Loveline will be right back.
Loveline. That's your favorite. That's right. It's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. And we are listening to Danny Bonaducci's daughter's favorite band.
That's right. The Gorillaz, followed closely by Fall Out Boy.
Yes. And who else did she? Green Day.
Green Day. She got to meet Green Day. This was, we were talking earlier about being the daughter of a celebrity in recovery. Like, there's no covering my tracks for this girl. She knows everything that's happening. But she also knows the pros and cons of being my daughter. Here was a huge con. I was up for an award for best reality star, most crazy reality star, whatever it was. And I took my daughter to the award show with me. I thought the bands would be there. There were a lot of good bands that she liked, including Fall Out Boy was playing. So I took her, she's sitting in the audience with my wife, and they show up on this big screen. And now for this category, here's Danny Bonaducci. And they show me drink a full pint of vodka in one sip, throw the bottle down on the ground and break it. I do something else, and the next shot I'm in my gym shooting steroids into my shoulder, and she breaks down crying. Well, that's a big con, being my daughter. It's terrible. She broke down, and the cameras like got on to watch her cry. It was awful. On the other hand, she loves Green Day, who turned out to be sitting right in front of her. They turned around and grabbed her, pulled
her
over.
When they saw her crying?
Yeah, they pulled her over to their aisle, going, it's okay, it's okay. She's going, oh my God, Green Day. I hope my dad freaks out again. I'll get to meet Fall Out Boy.
Oh, my. That's Danny Bonaducci. The phone number here, 1-800-LOVE-191.
That's Dr. Drew, by the way.
That's who I am. Let's go to Leroy's 27. Leroy.
Hi, how's it going tonight, guys?
We're good. What's happening?
Oh, not a whole lot. I've been listening to your show for the past couple of days. I work nights. I own a business during the night, and then I own another business during the day. And I'm trying to figure out what's the problem between me and my wife. Like, I've been married.
Well, you're never home.
You work too much?
Well, see, she used to complain that I didn't work enough. So I started two businesses, and now I'm running those. And now she's complaining that I don't spend time with her sometimes, you know, but I'm confused on what she wants from me. I mean,
no, you're not. No, you're not. You're doing exactly what all nasty guys like us do. What you've done is you took her legitimate complaint that you didn't have a job and you wouldn't go to your job and you wouldn't bring home the bacon, and what you did was I'll show you, I'll work myself to death and I'll never be around here. How about you get one gig that pays the rent and then you come home by dinner, say maybe 7 o'clock? What you're doing is you're sticking it to her. My father used to call it hanging them by their own petard. What you've done is you're showing her who's boss, that this isn't what you really want either. It's just a game that you're running on your girlfriend or your wife. That's my belief anyway, because I've done it. I do that stuff all the time.
And see, the other thing is like, she's gorgeous, you know, I love her to death, I'll do anything for her, but I'm losing the sexual attraction towards her.
Yeah. And you don't think it's because you're never around. You don't think it's that you've just exhausted and you've lost sort of an emotional connection with her. You don't think that has anything to do with it?
No, not really, because like, when I'm around her, I like to spend every moment I can, but she's always complaining about something, or she's nagging to me about this, nagging to me about that.
I will give you one piece of advice, Leroy, and I've said this last couple nights, is that women have a much keener sense of what relationships need. And if your wife tells you that we need to spend more time together, she's not telling you, she's not nagging you. She's telling you, for this relationship to survive, it needs the following: time, nurturance, attention, just like anything else in your life, like your jobs, like anything else, it needs attention. And without it, and women especially, most times, do not feel sexual if they're feeling that disconnect emotionally. And that's when they cheat, by the way, when they're not getting their emotional needs met.
I'll tell you something that happened to me, if you don't mind, and maybe this will help you, maybe it will not. I was, unfortunately, unfaithful with my wife at one point a long time ago. And somebody said to me, because I admitted and I came out with it, and they said, your wife is so beautiful. She's a 10. Why would you ever cheat on her? What's better than a 10? And I said, without even thinking, a 7 I haven't slept with yet. Mm. You know, there is something to be said. You know, you really have to do the effort. If you want to go home and sleep with the same woman every night for the rest of your life, you have to really mentally prepare for that. Especially if you're, you know, if you're an okay-looking man who owns two businesses, I would imagine that the temptation is at your door daily. Is that true?
Yes, I endure a lot of temptation. I soiled my oats before I got married, man. I had fun when I was younger.
I was going to say, I think that's a key ingredient. That's good, Leroy, that you did that. I actually think that it sort of decreases the probability that you'll sort of want to wander now that you've found somebody you really are into. But, you know, there's more going on here than just, hey, I'm losing my attraction to my wife. And you're sort of wanting it to be just that simple fact. And I think if you look at things more carefully, there's quite a bit more going on here.
And I've tried to look at it from a lot of different points. You know, I've even offered to take us to counseling.
Why don't you do that? I think that's a great idea.
A 6-week trip to Peru, where she's from. She's a Peruvian woman. And I mean, we took a 6-week trip. You know, I left the business. I left it all at home. Didn't want to deal with none of it.
Well, I don't mean to generalize because I've dated one Peruvian, but I have dated a Peruvian woman, and man, if you don't pay attention, they mean business. Yeah. At least the girl I dated, she was really like wanted attention. She wanted it now.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Laura, I don't know what more we can say than just that. I mean, the fact is you needs more, and if you're giving it more and that's not enough, there's still something deficient, then do what you said. You're going to take it to a professional, get it evaluated. Why not? You take your car in, for God's sakes, right, if it weren't working right.
Sound advice, Doug. Yeah. But I will say, just so you know, in my opinion, there is nothing you can do about things not being the way they were. They never will be. Things right. change. And if you don't want her the way you did in 2001, in 2006, well, that's possibly reasonable. And you need to start wanting her in different ways. But you can't let the physical go because they will want her and so will you.
Ashley, 17.
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, Ashley.
I'm so excited to talk to you. First, I wanted to tell you, Danny, that I'm a big fan of your show, and I just wanted to tell you, I think it's really cool. You can just tell how much your daughter adores you, and it's
Thank
really
you.
Sweet. And also, Dr. Drew, I have to congratulate you again and again on your book, Cracked. I can't.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about it, and everyone should go get it. It's an amazing book.
Yeah, Oprah should call that book up instead of getting hoodwinked.
Well, that's what actually bothers me, because the fact is that that's a book about what actually goes on, what really is the disease state, and this guy is writing a book about...
That's invented.
It's invented. And when I first heard about the book, I refused to read it because I said it's not possible. It's not possible that somebody was as sick as he described and is either A, not using now...
Right.
Or B, not in recovery, but not, you know, it's not possible. Or he didn't use the way he said he did. It's one of those things.
In rehab and recovery circles, that's a very important book. And when that came out, like, I know a lot of people that were really bummed personally, really hurt.
Because the guy claims that he can be so sick.
Because
people
were really helped in some ways by that book. People really believed it and thought, if he can do it, I can do it. And then when he turns out he didn't do it, that hurts.
But he
people.
Claimed to be able just to willfully wish away his disease, basically.
Right.
That's a destructive message.
But a real message of hope to some people whose lives, believe me, when you're drowning, you wish you could just wish for a life preserver.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, addiction, when it gets a hold of you, I said this to you earlier, nobody gets hooked to drugs because they sucked the first time around.
Worked.
They worked.
Yeah.
They worked wonderfully. So by the time you realize you're drowning, you just don't and you're not actually bathing. It's like, how did this go from the nicest, warmest bubble bath to that I'm drowning?
Yeah.
So it's a shock to you as well. And if you could wish it away, you would. And anybody that says you can, I think this is how cults get started. Somebody says just what you need to hear, and you go, good enough for me. I don't need reason. I'm just going to believe that guy and not drown.
It feels better. Yeah. There you go, Ashley. Thanks for triggering that. What's up?
Also, Dr. Jim, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to let you know, too, that I've been calling in for a couple years now, and your advice has always helped me a lot. And thank you so much for everything.
Our pleasure. It says here on the screen that you're wondering whether Danny has a second season coming up.
I was wondering. Are you going to be doing another one? Or?
You know, I don't know if we're supposed to announce this yet, but since you asked flat out, I won't lie to you. Yeah, we start next week or 2 weeks.
Is that going to be round-the-clock cameras and all that stuff?
Not around the clock. I think 3 or 4 days a week, pretty close to around the clock, though.
Wow. Do they follow the kids to school and that kind of thing? Or just
Yeah, they don't follow the kids to school. They ride in the car with my wife. They take her to school.
But they can't, when somebody follows you, somebody follows her. Is that how it works?
Yeah, somebody's in the car with me, somebody's in the car with her. And then, especially, I think they like that after therapy, because Gretchen and I see that so differently.
Do they have sort of stressors planned for you guys? They're going to put you through some paces?
Well, I didn't need any.
No, this time, though.
I don't know, because I told them this time, I said, I just can't. I've done that show. I can't.
It's a different show this time.
Yeah, I said, whatever you're expecting this year, you're not going to get it. Like, I'm not going to drink. There's no way. I've never been sober before.
The Danny Bonaducci funeral.
Yeah.
I've
never been sober before for any length of time, and even though it's short stays that I was, I didn't want to be. It was just like, how long till I could drink again and people won't bother me? And this time I've got some of the rewards of sobriety, and, you know, for a TV show that doesn't pay that much money, it's a, you know, it's a cable show. I'm not going to risk my whole life,
right?
You know, I wouldn't risk it for a network show either. I'm not risking it this time.
Well,
I had a wife at Yemen. For an Emmy, who knows what I might do. But, you know, I've reaped some of the benefits of it this time, and I'm just not going to play with it. So I hope we can deliver a good second season.
Tina, 26.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Tina.
How are you, Danny? I love the show. I think it's wonderful. My question actually is, I have 4 children, and the doctor prescribed me Xanax. And it's a very low dosage, but when I take it, it doesn't help me any. It makes me this angry, nasty, evil person, and I don't know, is there something different I can take? Is this what it's supposed to do to me?
No, it's not supposed to do that to you.
So just the opposite of that.
And do you drink also?
No.
Do you have alcoholism in your family?
No, I'm as like straight-laced as they come.
All right, well, you might want to try something called Seroquel. It's a little better.
I take.
You take Seroquel?
Yep.
It's Xanax can have, Xanax really is meant for very short-term use, and Seroquel can be used safely for longer periods of time, and it's a little bit more sedating, but I think you'll have a much better experience.
But it's also non-narcotics. You know, it's funny. I have
non-addictive.
I have 50, because they come in a vat, because they're non-narcotic.
Yes. Even people you say, don't you take those 50 down.
They're still sitting there. There's no use for them. They help me to sleep, and then after a while, it's like, since there's no upside, there's no fun part of Seroquel, next thing you know, I haven't taken one in 4 weeks. I still have 30 left. I probably still have 30 now.
They're really meant for agitation, that sort of thing. Sleep.
By the way, a lot of people don't know this, because real-life good doctors will give you Xanax to find medicine if it does what it's supposed to do, but they don't tell you the kick. It can be a bitch to kick Xanax.
Oh,
it can be
boy.
Really hard. Really hard. It's a nasty kick.
Horrible seizures, and it's a 2-week withdrawal.
Yeah.
And two phases.
It gives you the exact symptoms, except on steroids, the exact symptoms that you took Xanax in the first place for. You're so agitated, you're frightened, and everything makes you jump, and you see little things out of the corners of your eye and be afraid of them. It's a big deal.
Right, and that level of hyperstimulation that you get when you come off can go on for several months. Right.
And just what I need to be is more hyperstimulated.
I was thinking that. I think, Danny, man, you've got to get hyped up a little bit.
Yeah, so, I just got to stop being such a wallflower.
This is James, 22.
Hey, Dr. Drew, how you doing?
Good, James. What's up?
Hey, basically, I'm a big guy. You know, I'm like 6'10". I'm athletic. I'm about 285.
6'10"?
That's huge, man.
Did you play football?
Yeah, in high school.
I bet.
Not anymore. But basically, I've got a very small penis, and it's very embarrassing to me. I'm just very insecure about it, and I just basically what I'm asking is, do those penis enhancing pills work?
No.
Now, maybe this is just because I've never been, you know, I'm 5'6" and have my own shortcomings, but is it possible that it just looks small because there's 6'10" of the rest of you?
That's what I'm wondering. Have you ever actually measured yourself?
Yeah, I have, actually.
And where are you coming in?
It's like 4.5.
Erect or flaccid?
Erect.
Okay, because a lot of people are the same measurements. Did you know that? In length?
Sometimes.
They don't grow. Yeah, a lot of people. My friends made a joke, I've heard maybe in school or something. It was called not a grower, but a show or something. Like, I don't get it. I don't remember what it was.
But anatomy's called gym dick.
But I'm very embarrassed of when I'm flaccid. It's really small. It's really, but when I give a normal size, right? Nice.
That's pretty good.
Fine erection. Nothing special, but, you know, 5.5 inches, 6 inches, somewhere in there. So you're staying at 4.5 inches on a 6'10" frame. I can see how that could shock you, but 4.5 inches isn't stop the world. I have to get off right away.
Right.
And you should also check your girth.
That, and remember, most women don't have an orgasm with intercourse anyway.
I don't know what they do. They say they do. I've never been.
They need to have oral sex as some sort of direct stimulation. And the only thing that I've ever seen that actually changes the penis size is a surgery, and it's pretty aggressive. You have to actually, they peel the skin down, and they sew in some cadaver tissue. It's basically, I've described this to you before. It looks like they're sewing on a Pop-Tart. And then they cut the ligament that holds the penis to the pubic bone and then pull the penis away from the bones and brings it out about an inch. So you've got an inch of girth, about an inch of length, and there you go.
Yeah. For an inch, though, you're hearing these words, penis, peel. You know, that's good enough for me right there. They peel it back. I'm done with this. I'm not doing it.
Peel the skin off the penis.
As the doctor was saying, I think any reasonable guy, because also I think when you meet somebody new and maybe for the first 6 months, maybe even a year, I'm very quick. I can be way, like when I was single and I'd meet a girl, 30 years old, till I was single till I was 30. You meet a girl, go home, that's a very exciting proposition, you know? I'm not going to run a marathon here. I'm really excited. It's going to be brief for everybody involved. The only gentlemanly thing to do anyway is have her finish and do everything you can before sex.
Oh, yeah.
She should be done before you start because you're only going to last a minute or two anyway.
Then she's going to be relieved that you're quick.
Yeah. Then he'll be so happy. She goes to go to sleep, for God's sakes. Get me a taco. I'm starving.
1-800-LOVE-191 is the number here at Loveline. That's Danny Bonaducci. We're going to take one quick break yet, and I'll be right back.
Yeah, Loveline.
Loveline will be right back.
You want to talk to Danny Bonaducci, the phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191.
Of course, if you want to talk to Dr. Drew, we set that phone number. Don't put all of this on me, man.
They can talk to me anytime, though. See, you're special tonight. You're the one they want to come in and talk to. This is Lily 20.
Hello, Lily.
Oh, Lily.
See how special I am? Lily dumped me.
No way.
For another job.
Come on, Lily, you didn't. All right, let's talk to Nina, who's 13. Nina?
Hey.
Jeez.
Hey, what's up, Nina? It's weird when you talk to some of your kids' age, right?
Yeah.
Of course. Well, I have a mohawk, of course. I got it, you know. Go me. But there's two things I wanted to talk about. One is one of my guy friends, because, you know, I know he still has feelings for me. And he feels, well, he says to me, like, I don't really want to talk to you anymore or something, because he says that I look like a guy and he doesn't like that.
Yeah.
What's your question, Nina?
Does that make him feel like he's questioning, like, his manliness or something?
Well, I think first and foremost, and I'm going to talk to you like you're a grown-up because you're very articulate and you sound like a grown-up, so I hope you don't mind. But I don't think he's questioning his manliness as much as he's questioning your femininity.
And his attraction.
You know, that's enough. I didn't think about that. Yeah. If he does believe you look like a guy, good call, Doc. That's why you're the doc. That if he does think you have guy-like qualities yet isn't completely attracted to you, he does, in fact, probably have to want to question that a little bit. I had not thought of that. Do you question your sexuality at all?
Actually, I am bisexual.
What happened to you, Nina, growing up?
I don't really want to bring up past relations.
And so you were sexually abused?
Nope, not at all.
She says so proudly, like you should get a medal.
You bring up past relations. You're 13. How many past relations have there been?
Just one of my ex-chicks.
Ex-chicks? Year, how old was she?
We were like both 10 and in fourth grade.
Okay, both 10. That's not a relationship. That's child-on-child sexual abuse.
Okay, well, we kind of had a thing going on around, like, last year this time.
All right, now what set you up to be such a victim? Was it just chaos? Were your parents drug addicts or something? Was there just chaos in your home?
No, nothing. I just really liked her, and me and her still talk. Not that much, but we still talk. But the thing that I knew, like, made it obvious to me was when I fell in love with my best friend last year.
Made what obvious to you?
Like, that I felt that way about women, because I had other relationships like that with some of my close friends.
I got a quick question for you. So far, your two big relationships are with women. What makes you think you're bisexual?
Yeah, why aren't you gay?
Well, because right now I'm in a relationship with a guy, and I'm questioning that right now. That's what I was calling about, too.
Nina, something is very, very wrong. Okay? And it's not about your sexuality. It's about the sexual acting out at such a young age. It's about the confusion, the mohawks, the acting out, all of this at this young age is a bad sign. I suggest you look into this. Whatever your sexual orientation is, has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. There's just something. Have you ever been to a psychiatric hospital?
No, but my boyfriend has.
Yeah. I mean, there's something very...
How old's your boyfriend?
He's 15.
Something's really not right going on.
You know, I would actually at this juncture like to disagree with you. I just can't. I would really like this girl to sound, she sounds very mature. She's very articulate. Strings a nice sentence together.
Yeah, she's smart.
I would just like her to be gay and be happy about it and fine. And
that would be fine.
You're a little older than my daughter, so it's weird for me, but I don't really question anything about you. But then I hear the mohawk and I was 10 and... Right. And it is. It's, you know, it's disturbing public property. You know, it's just acting out now.
You got to add up the score. It's not about sexual orientation. That's what I keep telling her here. I add up the score, and I see the future, and it ain't pretty.
It ain't pretty, absolutely.
And so, Tina, I would look into things now before things really... You're on the launching pad of life.
How does a 13-year-old look into stuff like that?
They go to the school, go to mom, go to their doctor. I mean, just, you know, there are all kinds of resources out there. Take advantage
because
of
it. Because 99% or 99 out of 100 decisions I made at 13 were poor.
Oh,
but
sure.
I made one good one. So I'm
How about
not gonna
20?
Sit here,
How about 24?
Right, yeah. I'm not going to judge her for being 13 and possibly being gay and acting
no.
on it.
That's nothing to do
but
with it.
But it turns out that you were right, that that's not necessarily what's happening at all.
Right.
She's setting fires.
That's exactly right. Lily, 20. Hey, Lily.
Hello?
There she is. There you are.
Hey, am I on the line right now?
Yes, you are. You are on the line.
All right. Well, let me break it down for you. This is
break
my problem.
Cool.
I am 24, and I dated this guy, and I think I might have conceived his baby. But before that, I dated a guy, and he was a little dysfunctional in the sense that he had a little bit of a nub above his bottom.
Oh, you mean deformed? He had a physical deformity. He had like a tail.
A little bit. It looked like a lump right. or a tail.
Well, the lump is something called a pilonidal cyst.
And I think I'm pregnant. As a matter of fact, I'm sure I went to Planned Parenthood. I checked it out, but I'm reluctant to tell my boyfriend because I'm scared he's going to think it's from this other guy, and I'm not even sure if it is. But it might have a tail.
What's the difference?
Lily, boy, oh,
a cyst
Lily.
Is not a tail, darling. A cyst is a cyst.
Oh, Lily, my goodness. I feel like I'm talking to primitive man. I'm talking to somebody from ancient back in history. Yeah. Like,
I'm freaking out.
Lily, The thing on his rear there was just a prominent coccyx. It's a, or a pilonidal cyst. They are normal things.
But it's longer than usual.
I understand. It doesn't mean
that's why it's not a coccyx. It's a cyst.
Even the coccyx can sometimes kind of protrude
is
out.
Is this really common in guys?
Yes. Yeah. Relax, Lily, and it probably has nothing to do with anything he's going to pass on to anybody. I'm much more concerned about you being a mom. Have you considered adoption for this child?
No, I haven't. I'm going to have this child, and the father is not really into it, but I'm going to have it.
No, thank God, because Springer's running out of guests.
Yeah, again, I've got my crystal ball here.
Yep.
It's not looking good. All right, Lily, what about the guy that you said was a good guy that was going to maybe participate with you?
He wasn't going to participate with me, not at all.
So,
what do you do for a living?
So I wanted him to participate with me, but he's not going to.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a waitress.
And that's fine. What do you do for a living? You're a waitress. If you're questioning this kid's tailbone and you're wondering about if you're having sexual relations with somebody who you're going, hey, I wonder if this guy's deformed. You might have asked that first. And he might ask the other guy if he was going to be there for you. Wait, give me one second here. Here's the question. I want you to take time. All right, go ahead.
Go ahead. I turned her off. Go.
Thanks. I want you to take time to think about the child, because I would never, ever in a million years, not because of religious upbringings, I don't have any particular slant that way, but I would never recommend abortion as an answer to anything. It's inappropriate and wrong. But I would stop and consider giving this child a better life than you have dug out for yourself. And how do you do that? How do you deliver? How do you make sure? And what it is, I'm telling you, find the joy of a couple of good books and learn to. And that's a whole new world, because you will destine this child to the life at best that you have created. And I think this child deserves better than that.
And there are parents out there who are together, stable, two people ready to have a child that you could put her up for adoption.
Right. If you're not willing to put in the effort, that's a fine answer, but you can also put in the effort.
Make the choice on behalf of the child, and it's a sacrifice for yourself, I understand, but it's on behalf of the child. 1-800-LOVE-191. It's Loveline. Danny Bonaducci in here with us. We'll be right back.
If you need help,
call Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
That's all right. Here it is. Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci in here. Sober.
World record sober, by the way.
For Danny.
Yeah. Oh, for me.
There have been more sober, longer people on this earth.
There have been no people actually more sober than I am right now.
That's true.
Unless you count my Seroquel and my...
We don't, though. Because that you need for what you've done to your brain over the years, right? I mean, that's...
Well, there's two schools of thought on them. One is God handed me the brain the way it is, and I just followed directions.
Maybe.
And the other is that in following directions, I then took it to new heights.
Or both.
Right. I'll go with that.
I tend to think it's both, usually, because the kinds of drugs that people do these days really destabilize neurochemistry. So we see lots of mood instabilities, manias and depressions and back and forth. And also addicts, alcoholics tend to have a higher incidence of that stuff to begin with.
Right.
So it's both. It's really
one of the bazillion ways I know that I'm an addict is when I'm at a meeting and I hear somebody say they had some terrible, terrible time on some drug I've never tried. And I think, how'd I miss that? What do you mean you took Special K and fell into a K-hole? I don't even know what that is. I need to try that.
You're jealous of that.
Yeah, totally.
You got to, and I
can't believe you tried cat tranquilizers and I didn't get to.
Here's Luis, 18. Luis?
Yeah, hello.
What's up?
It's actually Lewis.
Lewis, I beg your pardon.
Sorry.
It's cool. It's your name.
I'm sorry?
I said it's fine. It's your name. What's up?
I'm 18, and I've had about two relationships so far, two very serious relationships. And in each one, my girlfriends were abused or molested by someone in their family early in their life.
All right. And?
And starting off, there was always intimacy issues. And for some reason, it's every girl that I've ever been attracted to or started a relationship with later was abused in some way or another.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. I was kind of wondering what that was too.
Doc, because I have a very unsympathetic point of view here.
Go ahead.
My point of view is that when I was a young man, and even not so young, I don't know any girls that weren't in some way molested. I've never dated a girl that doesn't have some yucky story about a babysitter or an uncle. You know, that it's not the world's most wild information that your girlfriend was molested in some way, shape, or form.
But trauma survivors would be attracted to somebody like you.
I can see that. I can see that.
You helped them reenact some of that
stuff.
But,
I mean, these women weren't even necessarily with me. I just, when I was single and running around and at the clubs, everybody had a story to tell about their bad uncle.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that it's not so rare that this necessarily has to be about him.
So it could be just coincidence.
It could just be coincidence.
It could be coincidence, but...
Do you have any sense that you want to save these people?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a sense that you want to save these women?
Well, yeah, I have a sense that I want to protect them from everything around
yeah.
them.
Yeah, and they always, of course, leave you for some bad guy that you were going to protect them from.
Yeah,
all
they
this
always
stuff.
Leave me for some other guy that they just met. And
I'd like to apologize for that. For every girl that ran away with a bad guy, I would like to apologize to the good guy they left you, and I'm sorry that I was with them.
Oh, my God.
Because I'm always the bad guy they leave for.
Here's one thing I want you to think about. Yeah. If they let you rescue them, they become forever dependent on people rescuing them to deal with their life. They don't usually want to be rescued. They might use it for a while as a way of sort of treading water and getting through problems. But the reality is you don't help somebody when you rescue them. They need you to be available and be around and be supportive. But to actually protect and rescue, that keeps people ill.
Yeah, but the thing is that they've all fit. They all have similarities. They were all
molested.
They were all
you didn't hear anything I just said, by the way, but go ahead.
I'm sorry. They were all a petite figure. They were between...
Well, that makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Five and a half feet.
They're tiny.
He describes them like it's a police lineup. What did the perp look like? Well, they had petite figures.
I think he's trying... Well, this is interesting. Okay, go ahead. And?
And they've all been tomboys. I think that's from how they've been abused in a certain way or another.
Did you know they were abused before you started dating them, or is this something where you were dating these girls and then one night they told you, you know, when I was a little kid, this happened to me?
Like,
did you know in advance?
No.
Do you think, and Doc, this is as much for you as for Lewis, do you think they sent off some kind of signal so he knew this was the right one?
Right.
There's one that needs to be rescued.
I got to get this.
Okay.
I got to be with that one. And I would just say, Lewis, understand that there's something about you, whether your mom was a trauma survivor or you two were abandoned growing up, where you identify with that painful person, that the pain that child, the person has internally, you kind of see the pain child. It's an adult you're dealing with, a young adult. It's not a child. It's not a child in pain, but it evokes something in you. You identify with it, and you have to make that pain stop because you can't tolerate it in yourself. Stop. Relax. Don't go for women that you find so attractive, because every time you're attracted to somebody, I guarantee you, it's going to be a trauma survivor. So find that. That's just the way attraction works. And so
that's wild to even think of.
Isn't that wild? And so you need to go for somebody you find and you know you're interested in, who you are kind of attracted to, but not that gotta have kind of thing, because that's going to be where the chaos ensues.
You know what's tough about for me that though is that every woman I've ever met thought they could save me. I mean, that's every woman I have ever met that stayed longer than the evening. Her interest was in saving me, whether I wanted it or not, although I've always thought I needed it. But there's something women get out of saving men. There's something that makes them, it's fulfilling for them in some sort of way.
Well, more
I love you, change everything.
But mostly what that is about, most commonly that is about the wish to change dad.
Right.
That dad was chaotic and difficult and abandoning, and if I could just make that right, I'd feel okay. And so here's my opportunity to do that now in the present.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. This is now Frank, 29.
Yeah. When I was very young, at least my older brother told me, I don't remember this, but my older brother told me that there are some neighborhood kids that were forcing me to drink water from dirty puddles. And then as I grew up old, as I got older, you know, I was just bullied a lot. And then when I was 12, I was raped by another guy who was 12 years old.
Horrible.
But all right. Incidentally, he's in prison now. So
good.
But four? Have anything to do with a child?
I was just wondering. I beg your pardon?
Did the charges against your attacker have anything to do with hurting children?
The reason he's in prison.
Yes. Well, he put a gun to another boy's head and
sodomized
him.
That's a huge yes right there.
But I didn't. I never told the police or anyone in my family about what happened.
Okay, what is your, as fascinating and rugged as this story is, what is your question?
Yes, well, I would like to know if that perhaps has something to do with me having certain fantasies. And I was wondering if it were normal for, I actually lived this out a few times. I like for women to smother me.
Well, you're not alone there.
Smother emotionally?
No, with a pillow.
No, smother me with, sit on my face and grind their vagina into me and
Yeah, good times.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a band called INXS meeting a lead singer because that is not that rare. You know, that's just not a rarity. It's not, you know.
Isn't there a chair designed for that and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, autoerotic asphyxiation, is that it?
Well, that's a little different, but I think this is
yeah, this guy actually has the good sense to have a woman there.
There's a name for this called crowning or print or something. It's something, yeah, something crazy like that.
Well, you know what? First of all, I don't think any fantasies are necessarily anything to set up a huge red flag unless you start acting out on them. And especially if you've got a good girl that doesn't get the signals that you're actually smothering. I mean, because people die this way, man. There's something to pay attention to.
That's when it's a problem.
What do I need to watch out for? I mean,
death would be a good one right there. You might want to watch out for
breathing,
that.
Not breathing, yeah.
I'd go with that.
Did Dr. Drew say something?
Not breathing. Not being able to move oxygen. That would be something I'd be concerned with.
Yeah, don't let things get away from you and they're important. Sometimes I'll be cavalier and Dr. Drew will hit something. I'll go, oh my God, that's right. That's a bigger deal than I thought if I'd have thought this out. But sometimes, and I haven't heard it yet because that's why you're the doctor and I'm the patient. Sometimes I think things are, you know, that's just the way, pardon the slang, that's just the way you get off. And if it doesn't turn into something ugly, I wouldn't overthink it.
Well,
it's
an interesting sort of, it's a difficult issue to determine when it's time to be philosophical, just go and say, just when it gets off, and look at it as something that's more, that's a part of a syndrome, a symptom that maybe we ought to be looked into. Now, in his case, he's been through some horrible traumas, and yet he's able to have relationships. He sort of seems okay. He's not complaining about depression, anxiety, and, you know, addiction or crazy behaviors or anything. He just has this one thing that's it's dangerous, but all things being equal, he's doing okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So there you go. It's just how we...
You know, it was odd when he first said these neighbor kids forced me to drink out of a puddle. It was like, I mean, maybe the water was cleaner when I was a kid, but when coming home from school, you always drank out of puddles. I walked over a mile home from school every day, and if I could right there, I'd drink out of a puddle.
In the valley?
Yeah, in the Woodland Hills, yeah.
Puddles. Cynthia,
can
what's going on?
Can you imagine bacteria getting to me?
No. Cynthia, they sure doesn't run. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Cynthia.
Yes.
What's going on there?
So I have a giant question for you guys. Okay, so I'm 36, much older than your other listeners. But I just got out this relationship with a guy that I am like the two-year girl. I'm like a monogamous two-year girl. And so consistently go into these two-year relationships. I am an executive, and these two-year things just piss me off because I never get past them.
What happens? Do they cheat on you or do you cheat on them?
After two years?
No, you break up with them so you can sleep with other people? What is it about the 2 years monogamy I don't understand?
I'm just done. It's like something happens and I'm like, I'm done. But this last one, he dumped me.
Well, the only other case that comes to mind for me in terms of this absolute time limitation issue in terms of maintaining a relationship is Tom Arnold, whose mother left when he was four. And since then, he's never been able to make it past 4 years in a relationship. And he's had multiple four-year relationships. Right. And at 4 years, he experiences it as done. And just the way you're describing it, and it's not only now that he's well into sobriety and healing and having all kinds of internal emotional changes that he's able to go beyond that 4 years. So,
okay, so great. So that's great, but this relationship I was not done, and I was sidelined by it.
Hang on. So did your dad leave when you were two?
No. Actually, he did, but I didn't know.
Okay, hold on.
You see,
hold
that,
on.
That's where you get a document.
Cynthia.
She doesn't even know what happened.
Yeah.
He didn't know. He didn't.
Tom didn't know either. His mom left when he was four, and that leaves an imprint on your brain.
No, his parents were married until my grandmother died, so they were married for 60 years.
That has nothing to do...
When I was two, but I didn't know about it because...
Cynthia,
when I was raised,
Cynthia, listen to me. Listen to me and stop talking.
Okay.
The fact that you don't have an explicit memory means nothing. It leaves an implicit memory on your brain and development. It's an internal clock that after 2 years goes off like an alarm clock, which says danger. Abandonment coming, quick, get out of this before that person leaves you. And in this particular case, you got left, and nothing's more devastating than that. Before you had a chance to slip in and leave on your own. Clearly, this is what's going on. It's why I brought up the story about Tom Arnold, and you don't have to have explicit memory for this to be the case. So I suggest you look into this and get some treatment because this ain't going to change. Or there's sort of one version of this you could get into that might work where you're in a chronic state of lack of consummation. Like, you're constantly trying to get this relationship going, and that might keep you going for a few years beyond the two-year rule. But an actual relationship will not go beyond 2 years because of this traumatic imprint
and I'll
that
just
you
say
need to get through.
That if a medical professional said that I had any similarities at all to Tom Arnold, I would immediately seek some sort of professional help. That should be good enough for you right there.
Okay. This is Anthony, 25.
Yeah, this is for Bonaducci.
What's up, Anthony?
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Hanging in.
Hey, I was watching you quite some time ago, and I seen you on the skateboard and went to the liquor store, and you mixed a drink right there on the curb.
Yeah.
And I realized you got in an accident. Supposedly, right? You got in an accident.
You mean recently?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, just the other day.
Okay, what meds are you taking now? I know you have to be taking some kind of meds, Vicodin, Somas, you know.
No, currently
or back then? Because the show, whether you saw it recently or just last night, the show was taped when it was taped, and that was coming up on a year ago for the scene you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, the 350 milligrams of Somas, that's just the same thing as drinking alcohol.
Well, 350 milligrams of Soma, although not excessive in my opinion, is also, I can't imagine a doctor prescribing it to you. The last time I had Soma, I jumped over the border to Tijuana to get it. Yes. Who gives you Soma?
Soma is converted.
It's a muscle relaxer.
It's converted by your liver to meprobamate,
right,
which is Miltown. Yeah. And it's very hard to get off that. In fact, when people stop using Soma, they get this restlessness in their limbs, and they get something called akathisia, and they want to jump out of their
skin. When I was coming off a couple of different things that do that, I had a tendency to, my wife would wake up and go, "You're dreaming," and what happened?
You're
I don't remember any
around.
Dream, but I was kicking.
Yeah.
So what that's are true. You currently
so
taking now?
I take Lexapro or Lamictal, and that's it. And sometimes if I can't sleep, a Seroquel.
He's got
nothing good, man.
So I don't divulge any confidences. You have a diagnosis beyond your addiction.
I have no confidences. Go right ahead.
Bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
And so that his bipolar disorder is being treated quite well with the Lamictal.
Thank you.
Okay, well, see, I'm taking Norco, Soma, and Xanax.
Yes, you're an addict.
Your doctor needs you, man.
You're game on.
Now
Danny's jealous.
Yeah.
No. I'm trying to wing myself off, and I was just wondering.
It never works. Anthony, it never works. I've never seen an outpatient detox from opiates work. You have to go into a hospital, period.
Yeah. And 350 mgs is nothing, you can sustain that habit for quite a while, but it's nothing to sneeze at. That's a pretty good hit.
It's gonna get worse too. And here's the deal. I understand you're trying to tape yourself
up. Xanax, Jesus.
I know.
It's a big night.
The tapers do not work. There is, of course, now Subutex and buprenorphine and these things to do outpatient detoxes. I have grave concerns about that because the reality is opiate addiction and Xanax too, which is a very hard drug to kick, requires sustained structure. You have to go somewhere for a while or you will use again. That's
and
it.
And by the way, junkies are having great ingenuity. And I watch a thing called, I'm sorry, what do they take instead of heroin? They give you the detox.
Well, clonidine.
No, that you drink it.
Oh, methadone.
Methadone. And these junkies have now found out that methadone and 2 mgs of Xanax is the same high as heroin.
So
now they're all strung on that.
Yeah.
You know, what you'll do is you'll start to mix and match so you're not addicted to one thing or another, and you're still going to end up a junkie. The doctor's right. You need to see some medical professionals about that.
Whoops. Ray, 29.
Ray.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good, man. What's up?
This is my problem. I come quick when I'm with my girl. But when I'm with other people, I don't come quick. The guy answered the call said it probably a mental pain. But since we've been separated, it'll be 3 months. And she's been with 6 different guys since then, since our separation.
That's nice.
That's okay. So what is your question? I have immediate thoughts about that on a personal level.
Go ahead. What?
I cannot take that.
Yeah.
I have been unfaithful and expect to be forgiven.
Yeah.
If my wife were ever unfaithful to me, even if I wanted to forgive her, which I would, my wife is my savior, I'd never get over it. I'd never recover. So 6 guys.
Forgiveness is not a possibility for you.
Well, the forgiveness might be for getting over it, being able to function in a house with a woman who's now slept with somebody else. I could never do.
Yeah, men are very... we're funny that way.
I spent the first 8 years of our marriage jealous of men that she met 10 years before she knew me.
Wow.
How could you go to the prom with that guy? Yeah, I had real issues there. So what does it boil down to? What's your question?
All right, my question is, I wanted to know if it could be similar.
This is terrestrial radio, that the F word and the S word doesn't fly here. So
did you follow that?
Every 3 years, it happens again. I mean, we've been together like 10 A little bit under 10 years, and every time she leaves me, it's after 3 years, and And
so
I
why are you still in this, Ray? You know, it's going to keep happening.
Why don't you cut your losses, bro? Get out of this.
Yeah. I already did that.
All right, so what's the question?
What can I do to help?
There's going to be a medication out soon that will lengthen the time. That's not out yet. You can wear a condom. You can masturbate before you go out. Just learn to kind of manage what is your physiology. You'll be all right with that. That's not a big deal. Focus on oral sex. There's many other things you can do. And as Danny was saying, focus on getting her.
Yeah, make sure that she is completely satisfied before you are. That's all there is to it.
And then she'll be relieved.
And the part of that is that most, as Dr. Drew pointed out earlier, most women do not climax from full intercourse. And so it doesn't even matter. Even if you didn't suffer from premature ejaculation, you would still want to check to her needs first.
Okay, Dan, I want you to hold on to your hat for this one because this goes right at the jealousy issue. Brent, 22.
Yeah.
What's up? You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
And Dr. Drew.
Danny, yes. Well, I'm just checking on something real quick because my dad, we've been watching the show Breaking Bonaducci, and
right.
I wanted to check if my dad's telling the truth. He says he used to date Gretchen before she moved to Chicago, he says.
Don't know. Where, what town?
I'm in Chandler right now, but it's Arizona.
Yeah, very possibly. You want to give me his first name? I know most of her old boyfriends.
Robert.
I don't know.
Well, you know, and by the way, used to date can mean they just had went out to dinner or something,
actually,
right, Brent?
He says he had quite the relationship with her.
Quite the relationship with her?
Yeah. Apparently, it was pretty serious, but she wanted to become a big mover, a big singer, and move out.
That sounds like Gretchen. That sounds like Gretchen. Hang on one second. That's my home number if we want to find out.
Want to call her?
Sure.
All right, so hold on.
Hold on,
we're
going to
call,
we're gonna call
Gretchen during the break and see about this guy. And we'll get your, and the screeners, if you could get his, Brent's dad's last name and then call back to the studio here for us so we can figure out who this guy is, it'll be very
interesting. Because it's funny, this will be a thing, too. I'll go, because now I've been confronted with a guy from back. I'll go home and this will be an issue.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Alice, 18.
Hi.
Hi, Alice.
Hi, okay, I have this, problem. It's kind of embarrassing, but I do not enjoy sex, and
okay.
I want to know why.
Because you're a girl.
You're 18, and have you been in a close relationship yet?
Yes, I have been in a close relationship.
And don't enjoy as in it's painful, or you don't reach climax? What do you mean?
Well, yeah, in the beginning it's painful, like when he inserts, it hurts. But then once he keeps on going, I just don't find it enjoyable. Like, I don't feel anything at all.
Are you a trauma survivor? Did somebody do something to you when you were growing up?
No.
And is he sort of attentive to you?
No, not at all.
Well, a guy's not attentive to you might be a problem.
Well, he's just not, because, I've had three different partners, and with all of them, I never thought, I didn't feel anything at all. But when I did feel something, it was quite painful.
I suspect if you're not a trauma survivor and you're just not sort of getting sort of, you don't seem to be online yet, wired up, that's not uncommon for a girl under the age of 22, under the age of 20 for sure. And maybe just cool out with the sex a little bit. Maybe focus on relationships and find a guy that really is very attentive, makes you feel sexual, and see if you can kind of bring it along a little bit. As you hit your early 20s, this will sort of start to work itself out.
Yeah, not enjoying sex at 18 is not necessarily remarkable.
Not that uncommon. Oh, here's the name. We got the name now of this guy.
Okay, cool.
We're going to call Gretchen.
I don't know if she's up. She has to take the kids to school.
That's up to you.
Oh, God, give her a call so the answering machine will answer.
All right, he's going to call his wife, and we're going to see about Robert, Brent's dad, to see what kind of quite the relationship they had.
Can you imagine my wife having an ex-boyfriend that has a 22-year-old son? God, don't tell me you're hers, okay?
All right, we'll be right back.
Love Line. We'll be right back.
Please hold.
All right, we have to complete the drama of Danny's lovely wife, Gretchen. We've been speaking to Brent. He's 22. He lives in Arizona. And he says his dad had quite the relationship with
Gretchen.
Quite
the relationship.
And so we called Gretchen during the break. And Danny?
Well, I called her and I said, do you know Robert so-and-so? Here's his last name. She said, no, I don't think so. And then I told her what you said, Brent. And she said, no, I don't really think so. But let me tell you this. Is this a story your dad likes to tell, that he used to date my wife?
Not particularly that he likes to tell. We've been watching the show, and he mentioned it. And to tell you the truth, during the break there, I went in there and I woke him up.
Nice.
And I asked him, I said, so I told him about it, and then he goes, oh, wait, no, we just used to be friends.
See, there you go.
I told him I got him there, so I did catch him in the middle of something.
Well done.
Somebody's lying to somebody, because Gretchen's going, nope, I don't even recognize the name, but I think everybody's running for cover here.
But it sounds like...
I wanted to find out, because he says she used to be blonde, and she came from here.
That's true.
She was blonde.
That's true.
Well, that's possible.
And she did come from there.
She did move to Chicago to be a singer. I think your dad knew her.
I think they knew each other, but I really believe Gretchen when she kind of... She seemed a little... bewildered by it. Like, huh,
I think there's a very good chance you're my stepson. The only problem is if you're 22 and dad's there, we've only been married 15 years. So the math would be a problem.
Why?
Well, he should have been with a woman giving birth to this young man, right?
Oh, that's a good point. So, right. Well, unless, when was she living there? More than 22 years ago?
No, I don't think so.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Hey, Brent, you get that math?
Did you follow the math on that, Brent?
I don't know, because because... I remember it was after he divorced my mother.
Ah,
okay.
I think 3 or 4 at the time.
Wait. Let me just cut to the chase here. Is your dad claiming to have had sex with my wife?
Never actually said he had sex, just that he dated. Like I said, he did change his mind now. So
yeah, they sat around the same dinner table one time.
She immediately called.
Gotta love men too, right?
She called this guy's dad. Said, "Start lying immediately. My husband's a maniac. He'll come to Arizona and kill you."
Really? I think it's just more. I know men. Their thing is like, I've rubbed my stink on this one. I did. Well, how? Right. I was in the same room with her.
Do you know what happened? I will tell you the truth about that. One time, because I used to be violently jealous. Of course, never violent with my wife, but like I'd run into an ex-boyfriend of my wife's or an ex-girlfriend or anything. And years before I ever met my wife or a girlfriend or whatever, and I'd be mean to them and be physical with them. I would do anything I could to let's just throw right now. How could you? I don't care if it was 1978 when you had sex with her. I have to kill you. You can't know my wife that way. So what has happened, though, is we were moving to Chicago, and she said, honey, this is where I grew up and was single. If you run into one of my ex-boyfriends here, are you going to be an ass?
In Chicago.
Yeah. And I said, oh, yeah, I am. I'm going to be an ass. You should be aware of that. Ugh. And I went on my first night on
the
radio.
Were you sober at that point, or were you using that?
No, I was using heavily.
Yeah.
So I went on the radio that night and said, hey, my wife's from this town. Her name's Gretchen Weshilmer. If you've ever had sex with my wife, could you call me right now at 1-800 blah, 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 blah?
Well, we're out of Chicago, so anyone who wants to call in and give us that info.
Because what happened was the whole world called. Oh. Whole bands called. Girls called. It was really funny.
All right. We're going to leave poor Gretchen alone.
I'm glad we had that moment.
James, what's up, James?
James, you sleep with my wife, bitch? Oh, excuse me.
I don't know. I'm in Tucson for about 3 years, Mr. B.
Okay.
Anyways, Dr. Drew or Mr. Drew, I was going to ask you the definition of child on child molestation.
Yeah, I heard that too. I'm kind of interested in that too.
It's very common.
Short there, man. You know, it confused me a little bit.
We talk about it all the time on the show. It's very common. When a child has been sexually abused by an adult, they will typically then turn around and become sexual with their peers. So a child under the age of 12 who has explicit directed sexual contact, oral sex, genital contact, intercourse with a child prior to puberty, when that biology shouldn't even make sense to them, that's child-on-child sexual abuse. And you can be guaranteed pretty much that child has been sexually abused by an adult, the first one. And it has a huge impact on the child not quite the same as when an adult's doing it, but it has a huge impact when a child
does
it.
Would you say, in following that logic, then, that there is still an aggressor and a victim?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
The problem is, though, that the victimizer was tooled by an adult,
right.
Created in the lab by an adult.
Right.
And they will go on to do more of that in their young adult
life. I was
very
concerned about that. I took my daughter to see a movie that we had seen the first one together, and this one was R-rated, but I thought over violence. Underworld, with a vampire movie.
Oh, yeah.
And she loved that movie, and I loved that movie, and I said, when number two comes out, I'll take you to see it, and I did. And in this movie, unlike the first, there was a real sex scene. And before I could cover my daughter's eyes, she took the hat off my head and covered her face because she's a little kid.
Right.
And I looked to make sure she still did it. She did it. She did not see that scene. But I thought to myself, that's instructions.
Yeah.
That's what sex looks like.
Yes.
You know, I just, had my daughter not been so young, gone, ew, gross, and covered her eyes, that was a blueprint to how it's done. And is that what happens with child-on-child abuse? Somebody gives them a blueprint? This is
right.
What it looks like?
But it's something about our wiring that seeing it, you have to see a lot of it. You have to be around pornography a lot before it kind of traumatizes you and gets in. But when somebody does it to you, violates your body spaces, then that's it. You're wired. You're wired that way now.
It's a complicated world, huh?
You know what? It's a lot simpler. Some of the basics of motivation are simpler than people realize. In this day and age, when so much is about trauma and abuse, that you can pretty much predict how people are going to be. Joseph, 19.
Hey, I'm kind of wondering, my question is, right now I'm having some girl problems. I'm kind of wanting to meet more girls my age, and it's kind of hard because I don't get out that much. Like, I have a job.
And you're 19, and it's hard to meet girls? Isn't that mostly who's out mixing it up?
I don't know. I just can't seem to find them around here because I just moved to the area in August, and ever since then I've had a job. And
are you the Unabomber? Where do you live?
Where do I live?
Yeah, you're near a mall, wherever it is girls go these days.
Do you live in a hut, in a teepee out in the woods somewhere?
Yeah, I went to the mall, and I didn't see that many girls my age. They're all like, young and 17, and I'm like, God, same for me.
17 is your age.
Well, 19 is, it's a little, you know, he's like the, remember the character in Dazed and Confused that Matthew McConaughey plays? He's going back to the high school, reaching into the high school well is a little bit of that. So, Joseph, how about...
The woods aren't for me. I mean, there's freaking Patch Adams and Grizzly freaking what else is out there. I don't know.
It's a weird but it's just not for me. Okay.
Why don't you focus on, like, going back to school or getting a hobby or a club or something where you can meet people or have friends set you up? You have to be systematic about it. You can't just walk out one night and go, oh, here I am. So I'll walk through the mall and find somebody.
I don't know. I want a relationship where I want to get to know them first, like, call them, talk to them, somebody I could talk to for a while, and then get into a relationship, get to know them a little bit. But, see, I've had a friend call his friends and get, like, hook us up and stuff just to meet.
Good.
But it's not working out. And then he gave me some phone numbers, and I called him and started talking to him. And then I found out some of these girls, like, 17, most of them are 17. There's been one 18-year-old, and she's already got a boyfriend. She doesn't like talking. And I'm like,
what about the web? I don't like talking. How about the web? Yeah.
I don't have a computer.
See, that's a drag, and this did not work out well for me, especially since I'm a grown man, but I got on this thing called MySpace.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm typing away, and you've got these many friends, and the next day I had 600 friends, and the next day I had 9,000 friends.
Wow.
But all of a sudden, I was taken away. Like, these girls with scantily clad women would send you their pictures and talk to you, and I end up typing to them, and the next thing I know, Gretchen comes down, and I'm callous to it already. Gretchen goes, what are you doing? I said, oh, just writing this girl in Cleveland, and she's half naked on my screen, and she's written rather scandalous things, and I'm actually writing kind of scandalous stuff back to her, not even thinking about
it. It's weird how sort of an intimacy of that conversation gets going on the web, isn't it?
Amazing. Yeah. My wife started to scream at me, and I said, honey, you know, I'm not cheating. I'm typing. You don't get,
Women see
tunnel.
That. Women see that
they
very
do.
Differently.
They do.
Women feel that any kind of emotional or intimacy, a contact outside of their relationship is a transgression.
I happen to agree with that. I just don't. I just think you can't break up with me if I didn't actually physically cheat. That's the law.
That's a man's thing.
Right.
Women are much more upset by
I told her
emotional
she started
infidelities.
To pack, and I said, are you crazy? You cannot leave me for typing. You just can't. I really talked her out of it on those grounds.
It's against the international
system. It is. There's rules to this. You've been married to me 15 years. You think you're going to leave me over emailing? Unpack.
Tristan, 19.
Yes.
What's going on? You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
And Dr.
Hello, Danny. Hello, Dr.
Hey.
Drew. Basically, when I go out with my girlfriend or whoever, or any girls or whatever, during the whole dinner or movies, whatever we're doing, I get very, like, excited, anxious about having sex and going out and getting it done, you know, but when it comes down to it, I just shut down.
You mean you can't get an erection?
Yeah, I don't get a full hard on, but like I get excited about it, but then when it gets time to do it, I just have no motivation towards doing it.
Huh. How about a relationship first? Rather than just somebody you're just dating, how about you build a relationship before you try to have sex with somebody?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I've had girlfriends and stuff, and when I go out with them, it's the same thing. Like, I get excited about it, but then when it comes down to doing it, it just doesn't work out.
So is there any chance you're overly excited about it, that you've put too much importance on it, that you freaked yourself out?
See, that's what I was kind of wondering. That, I mean, I just have no clue. Like, it's I'm excited about it, and it doesn't work.
Well, being anxious works against you. And at your age particularly, they can be very overwhelming and anxiety-provoking, and, yes, things stop working when you're nervous and anxious. Are you on any medication?
No.
Do you have any medical problems?
No.
Okay.
How old are you, if you don't mind my asking again?
19.
Actually, this has happened to me twice in my whole life, but the one time I was very particular to me, I was 19, that's your age, and Well, I'm going to say approximately because you might be able to identify her by the year. I believe she was Miss Teen California that year or the year before. But this was an outrageous, remarkable girl.
Right.
Super popular, the most attractive woman I'd ever seen at that point in my life. And, you know, at 19, I'd done the whole Partridge Family thing, which probably means nothing to you. But it was a big deal. I'd met hundreds of women by the time I was 19 years old. But there was something about this girl that was just so I couldn't believe it. And when it came time, I couldn't do it. And for the life of me, couldn't figure out why. It was startling that this wasn't
your
working
penis,
out.
It became somebody else's penis.
Yeah.
All of a sudden. Well,
and not a very friendly person.
There's certain things that, like, will get me going. And I've gotten, the closest I've gotten with my one of my girlfriends was anal sex. And that got me really going. But then after we were done, she had a butthole the size of a man.
Oh, that's, okay, yeah. Nice. See, this wasn't fitting together. Tristan's a bogus call.
Really?
All right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. The butthole size mason jars is a universal sign that he's right. You got us. We were going there, but it didn't make sense, I gotta say.
That's why you're the doctor, because you can't say anything too weird for me. Let's go.
Nick 30.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Good, what's up?
Yeah, I have a quick question to ask you. My son's been living with me for about 3 months now before he was with his mom. But his mom had this boyfriend who she's still with him, and he's on meth. Anyways, over the period of time that he lived with them, he wets his bed every now and then, and he's done it just the first time last week when my wife told me. And I was wondering, would there be any single type of abuse that would end up for that?
How old's the boy?
Eight. He's 8.
He's 8 years old.
You're asking if bedwetting is a sign of abuse?
I think what he's really asking is, can I just predispose myself to the fact that this new boyfriend's doing something bad to my son? Because that's what he wants to hear.
No, actually, I'm wondering if there's any type of abuse that probably could have happened to him, not sexually but mentally, that could cause him to be doing this.
Yeah, he's around a meth addict, and he's away from his mom, and there's chaos in his home, and his dad's living somewhere else, and there's all kinds of hell going on in this kid's life. Of course.
Like, what would you suggest? Because I was thinking about taking him to, going to talking with his teacher and taking him to counseling.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Over bedwetting?
No. The bedwetting is something that's easily manageable. These days, they just put him on timers. They give him DDAVP.
Right.
But the fact that he's living, you know, mom has turned him over to dad. Mom lives with a meth addict. It is chaos.
Yeah.
This child's
by the
life.
Way, the red flag for me right away is when dad has full custody.
That's a bad
to
sign.
To me, that's always a bad sign. Because reasonable judges, I hate to say this, because if my wife left me, I would think, you know, you don't just get to predispose yourself to giving full custody to my wife. But once you investigated, then you would.
They're always predisposed to give it to mom.
And
mom has to be an egregious problem for them to hand it over to dad.
Yeah.
Now, in your case, Danny, they
be a smart call.
Well, she'd think how egregious she'd have to be for them to hand him over to you.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah, they said, here, I think what's best for Isabella Dante is if you get them. Gretchen would have to spontaneously burst into flames, you know, and only use flammable liquids.
All right, the phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. That is Danny Bonaducci. We're going to take yet one little break here. Oh, we're going to talk about abused people and the attraction theory, and then we've got...
I thought that was interesting. I'd love to hear
you want to hear
about that
again? All right, we'll talk about that after the break.
1-800-LOVE-191. Loveline will be right back.
Everybody, it's Loveline. I'm just studying a box of Godiva chocolates here, trying to decide which one I should dive into. It's ridiculous.
You can go with my school of thought and just bite everyone till you find out.
Go ahead, go nuts. Some lovely listener sent this to us as a way of trying to persuade us to let them on the air.
Smart move.
It's
nice.
Very good. Got my attention.
I'm nowhere near the phone buttons, but that would have worked for me. Be on right now. You with the Godiva chocolates.
Oh, look at that. Oh, my God. All right, anyway, get my mind off this. All right, let's go to the calls. This is Mike 30. Danny Bonaducci in here. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Dr. Drew. Hey, Mike. Sorry. Hey, Danny.
You're Mike.
Yeah, I'm Mike. You're Danny.
Yep.
First of all, I love your show, guys. Dr. Drew, your show is awesome. Miss Corolla, though. But anyway, I got a quick question. You know how you always say that an abused person will always feel attractive of an abusee, but another person that's an abuser? How do you explain? I totally agree with you. I from what I've seen, and you know, I totally agree with your theory. How do you explain the fact that how do they find each other? How an abuser obviously is not going to be an abuser out of the first
Yeah, it's quality. It's emotional. You know, we communicate with each other on very many, many different levels. You know, our brain is operating and picking up cues and things that we're not necessarily consciously aware of. And when you've been abused, first of all, there's a psychological reaction, which is, I need to make that okay. I need to solve that problem. I need to, you know, this thing that was so overwhelming to me and was so painful, I need to make it right. So there's sort of a psychological aspect. But there also seems to be some sort of a wiring phenomenon where people develop these fixed, what some people refer to as attractor states, like these fixed, repetitive neurological webs and patterns that we just simply are driven to reenact. And how we find the other players to participate with us is obviously a very complicated set of nuances that respond to.
Is there ever some sort of secret underground handshake that a lot of people are unaware of? Say, I go to a bar and I've been abused.
Yeah.
And there's a girl to the right of me and a girl to the left of me, and yes, they both wish my attention.
Yes.
And I, for some reason, unbeknownst to myself, they're both the same in appearance, they're both the same in gregariousness, mm-hmm, but I find myself attracted to the girl on my right.
Right.
And I have been abused. Are the odds better that this girl on my right has been abused than the girl on my left because I found myself attracted to her, or is it just a roll of the dice there?
The odds are she'll be an abuser.
An abusor.
Yes.
But the odds are, just by my sheer attraction to her,
the fact that you're attracted predicts volumes about who she
is.
That's
fascinating.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
It is fascinating. And it's that attraction. You know, the more abuse you've suffered, the more powerful that attraction is. That's the really crazy thing. And there's all kinds of sort of variations on that thing. But things that were not working for us in childhood, magically we're profoundly attracted to in adulthood. It's how we end up, you know, marrying our parents, getting relationships like our primary relationships. That these are, I mean, the self is really built in our primary relationship. So naturally enough, we, like a lock and key, walk around looking for people that fit with our sense of ourself, that make that fittedness is sort of there for us, and it's something we are naturally drawn to. People want to say that it's things we're comfortable with, but it's much more than that, because we got to be in that. We need that, and we fight to stay there. It, you know, and it can be a source of great passion and renewal too. Great relationships are built off that, but you have to be working on it, because in and of itself, it can create chaos and destruction.
Yeah. I prefer when Gretchen says this for me, because me talking about myself in a third person is rather odd.
Sure.
But I have found, and not always, believe me, people, smart people, well, no offense, dear, but some people, and I think it's good judgment, run from me like I am the plague. But some people, some women, find the fact that I am obviously damaged in some way attractive.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, they almost can't deal without it.
And you will find that most of them had dads that were very similar to that.
Really?
That there's something about that experience that you provide for them that is passionately connecting. You know, they have to be a part of that. And something they learn to love that person that creates that experience for them, and so they're drawn back into that. I was reading a book recently called A General Theory of Love, where all this stuff is sort of outlined in quite good detail.
That was recommended to me in rehab.
A General Theory of Love?
Yeah.
It's very good. It's very well done. I read it years ago, and I reread it just the last couple of days, and it goes through a lot of these mechanisms whereby this is all. And it's not fully flushed out yet, but it's clearly there and clearly being worked out. This now is
interesting.
Terry, age 49. 49.
A grown-up.
Yes, actually, and a really big fan of yours, Danny.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Dr. Drew. How are you?
Hi, Terry. We're great.
Good. I love the new program, how you have the different guests on. It's very interesting, and you've had some really good guests. But, Danny, I wanted to tell you that I've been a big fan of yours, and especially I'm on the sidelines rooting for you,
thank you,
and supporting you in your sobriety.
When you were a kid, were you watching him? You would have been his age when he was on the Partridge Family.
Actually, she's 49, so she would have been totally after Cassidy. She didn't care about me at all. That's why I'm a drunk today, because you loved Cassidy.
Is that true?
Funny. Yeah, actually,
of course it's true.
Because you were really young and
obnoxious and fat.
No, actually, I loved that show when I was a kid. It was really fun. Yeah, but I just think it's so great. And every time that, you know, there's been, you know, a couple times when you've gone out and I've said, oh, my gosh, I'm just rooting for you. And I'm just so glad. I love your family. I love your kids. And I just really want that to work for you. So.
Well, thank you. And I have found that to be a really odd thing, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, but there is a rooting section. You know, there are people who just don't want me to go down in flames. I unfortunately spend most of the time not on that team.
Mm.
You know, I just want to see how it ends up. Mm. You know, I just want to see how big the explosion is. Mm. But there are other people that have no investment in me, like this young lady, that really do root for me, which I find I take to the most tender spot in my heart, and I appreciate it.
Good, because it's a very human story that you tell, you know.
Thank you.
Sean, 21.
Yeah, my girlfriend called about a month ago. I think it was when Rob Schneider was on.
And yeah.
She was telling you guys that she likes to have, or her boyfriend, who was me at the time, liked to have sex with bacon in the room.
Nice.
Do you remember that call?
No.
With bacon in the room? That's what I love about this job. That's what I love about this job. I can see in 3 weeks not remembering the bacon call. Absolutely.
Okay, well, we had just broken up, and she was trying to get back at me. I just wanted to click.
With you?
No, I dumped her, and she was
dumped her. I beg your pardon.
And then she started telling all her friends and bragging about it, and I guess she had taped it, and I got a hold of that, and I was very furious. I mean, she's got a bubble.
Over bacon? I don't understand.
Who cared? No one knew.
What is so egregious here?
No one knew who she was or who you are. Now you're sort of filling the story out for us. Now we know you and her.
You know, who does not like sex with breakfast meats? I mean, it's not like the worst thing you could be accused of.
I mean, and she was like, oh, he gets off by that. But, I mean, she just sticks it in that mason jar butthole of hers and just.
That must be tough after a while.
Yes. We got weird calls tonight.
I bring that out in callers.
You've done it. I blame you. This
I do.
Is,
I take exact responsibility.
Miguel, 25.
Hey, Miguel.
Hey, how's it going? I'm a big fan of this show. Just to let you know, Dr. Drew, I've been listening to you for a long time. Okay. So my question is, I have hair on the end of my penis.
Are you uncircumcised?
Yes, I'm uncircumcised. I have foreskin.
And does it re-tear frequently? Sort of re-injure it?
No. What happened?
Tear.
Tear.
He said hair.
21. I couldn't retract it all the way. And then all of a sudden, one day I noticed that I could, and I had that tear. And I went to a doctor, and he thought, well, it could be herpes, but it turned out that it wasn't. You know, it came negative for that. And he sent me to a urologist.
Right.
And the urologist looked at it, and he told me that he asked me, he's like, do you have any discharge, bleeding? I'm like, no. And he told me that I was fine. That was just, irritation. But I've had it for...
Well, typically, the treatment for that is circumcision.
Right.
That's the treatment. And, in fact, what happens as you pull the head out, it can tear more, re-injure, and then
also
spinose further.
And that leaves you at much more risk as a man for STDs, especially HIV.
Not much more risk, but yes, it has been shown, and that's one of the sort of discussions that's going on right now in the world's literature, that the risk for wart, HPV, the risk for HIV, is higher if you've been uncircumcised. So now there's sort of a worldwide movement towards more circumcision. Try to reduce the
and
risk
I know
of cervical
of guys
cancer transmission.
That are now against it. I know guys. That
I know it's
a
crazy.
Big
I know, but it's kind of. I think that's dying out a little bit. That was pretty crazy.
It was big for a while.
People are taking my foreskin. Who cares?
Shut up.
Take your fingernails too, for God's sake. So let them grow to weird proportions.
No, I'm with you. But there was a big movement for a while.
I know.
People were trying to grow it back and having surgeries. It was crazy.
Way too much energy.
Way
on
too much
life's
energy.
Got a lot more stuff to be worked on than your foreskin.
Just my unit's got a lot more purposes than just that.
It's Donnie, Danny Bonaducci. We're going to take yet another quick break and be right back.
Loveline will be right back.
Right, here we are with Danny Bonaducci saying goodnight.
Wow, that's it?
That's it.
I went
can't
really
believe it.
Fast.
You and I have spent the whole day together. Danny, I've been going steady all day.
All day since noon.
I know. I had to turn him down a couple times in the bedroom. It's really just kind of... Anyway, we'll talk
You're
about it.
You're a handsome man, Doc. You,
we'll be talking about it again tomorrow night. Danny will rejoin us. And is Gretchen coming in tomorrow night with maybe?
I know that she really wants to, so I would assume she got a babysitter.
It'd be fun. So his lovely wife, Gretchen, will
maybe
join
that
us.
Guy Robert could call back and tell him about how he's with my wife, if you know what I'm saying.
And watch Danny go insane. He will lose it. He'll probably leave the studio, head for Burbank, get on a plane, go to Phoenix.
Right to Chandler. And beat I'm this sure. guy's ass.
All right. So it's Dr. Drew then with Danny Bonaducci saying good night and stay well.
This has been Loveline. Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station.
Nash. The producer for Loveline is Annie Golden. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.